when we were on our way home, I stopped to get gas, and we're just at the gas station. My brother-in-law and I are just, I'm sitting there filling up the tank, and we're just looking at each other like, what in the world just happened? We didn't know what to say. We were speechless.
All right, welcome back to Blurry Creatures. It's been a wild ride. We've hit 100 episodes. We're still going. We thought it'd be fun to bring Tim on last minute and just have an off-the-cuff conversation, Luke. You know, just...
Yeah, I think Tim heard that Judd came back on. He wants to vie for the top spot. So this is... They continue to go neck and neck as we round into triple digits. It's Judd and Tim.
Yeah, that's right. I love it.
No, but in all seriousness, this is a special week for Tim. We are back into conference season. The conferences are happening again, which is a wonderful return to pre-life of the last 2 years. And Tim's got the Birthright Conference here in Nashville, Nate. We're gonna be a part of it. We're gonna be kicking the whole thing off by interviewing Tim in a live podcast interview to start the entire Birthright Conference.
Yeah.
And
nothing like kicking off a conference with two dummies.
It's the best way
to do it.
It's only uphill. It only gets better from there.
That's right. We're going to have stickers. We're going to have t-shirts. We're going to be hanging out with you guys. And then we're going to announce, too, right now that we're giving away 5 pairs of tickets to members. That's right. If you have the ability or you live close to Nashville and you want to come, subscribe to the show, become a member, blurrycreatures.com/members. And we're going to pick those tonight. And we're going to let you know, and we're going to give you some tickets to the show. And we're also going to be hanging out with members before the VIP dinner, too. So,
right. So after the interview, sometime between the interview and the VIP dinner, Nate and I will be around, in and around the hotel. We'll have, like you said, t-shirt stickers. We'll have a very pregnant merch girl working the table.
Let's go.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting to kind of do this in person. You know, we've talked to Tim so many times here just in the virtual world with most of our guests, but to be able to hang out, rub shoulders, try to make him laugh in person.
Yeah.
Crack the egg, you know.
Crack the egg, yeah. And we kind of talked about that this episode. We just had a fun interview with Tim, talked about some of his UFO encounters, which is wild. It's funny because we did all these episodes with him and he's like, have I ever told you the time I saw a UFO like right above my car? No, you didn't, Tim. You didn't tell us that.
No,
but it's going to be fun. We're excited. Tim's been super generous with his time with us over the years. And we can say that now, over the years.
It's plural.
Yeah. And everyone out there, like, seriously, if you support this podcast, I mean, it's really like we put a lot of time and energy into this. So it doesn't go unnoticed. We have a lot of members who do support the show. And really, it allows us to edit these episodes with just spend a long time putting music and breaks and finding good guests. And your membership is really the way we keep the lights on here. So when people sign up, it just gives me that juice. Just like, boom.
It does give you the juice, doesn't it?
New member. So we're trying to find ways to give that back to you. We have a members chat coming up on May 23rd, just like normal, 7 p.m. Central. We're hanging out and we're going to talk to you guys. We had over 120 members hop on board to that last members chat. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. You know, everybody behaved, didn't get unruly.
People were raising their hands to ask questions.
It was a model of this beautiful community.
Yeah. Luke gave out a few hair tips.
No, we did. You know, we talked a little bit about what we'd do. You know, grow it longer in the back, short on the sides, flat top on the top. That's the way we do it now. It's coming back, Nate. Yeah. It's so funny, man. I was yesterday at coffee, and I was just counting the mullets. At least it's back in Nashville, Tennessee. The mullet has returned. Time to break out that Firebird. Get out that late 70s, early 80s Firebird and that leather jacket, Nate.
Yeah. Members only. Leather jacket.
Yes, that's of course. Only members only.
Well, Tim Alberino is texting me right now. It's Tim time.
Roll that time, Tim.
No, seriously, though, everyone who supports the show. We had a lot. We even had donations last month. People are tipping the show. If you want to tip us, you can even tip us. #Hashtag Blurry Creatures. We got it.
Did you say cash tag?
Cash tag. Yeah. Cash tag Blurry Creatures. You use the Cash App, Luke?
Yeah, from time to time.
All right. Well, if you want to tip us, #Blurry Creatures. You can donate to us on the website, and you can become a member. We'd love just to have members, because the members, it's a great community, and that's what everyone says. And if you listen to episode 100, people were just going off on how cool the community is, and that's what we enjoy. So enter now. Get your chance to win some tickets. Hang out with us, and seriously, of all the podcasts out there to listen to, we're really appreciative and just lucky and blessed that you guys listen to ours.
With that, let's hear about Tim's UFO experience.
The history of our Earth is so different from what we can imagine.
Enjoy the journey. The Smithsonian, that if they found out about a large skeleton somewhere, was to go get it.
I'm going to assume at least one person is right, because if one person's right, it busts the paradigm.
It all goes back to the fallen cherub. And the problem with the modern-day church, they have a very truncated view of the supernatural.
This backdrop that's just pregnant with all kinds of meaning associated with this Mount Hermon event.
And this guy defects from the kingdom. That's a big deal.
Tim, we're going to see you in like 5 days or something.
Yes, you are.
Let's do it.
Come to your home turf.
And we're going to give away some tickets on this episode for that conference coming up. So if you want to become a member of the show, we're going to give away some tickets.
To members only, to the Birthright Conference.
Tim, we're excited. We wanted to do one last push with you. And kind of, I was thinking we could get a little bit more off the cuff, because sometimes when we talk, we have a lot of heavy theology and it gets a little on the intense side. But I thought it'd be fun. I was talking to you earlier today about maybe just some more off the cuff kind of just descriptions of some of the things you've seen. You said you saw a UFO pretty close, like 40 feet above you. And you also said when you were in Peru, you saw some stuff. And I know that you've traveled all over the world, and sometimes we get really specifically into like a certain topic about, you know, transhumanism, or what does Genesis 6 really mean? It would just be fun to kind of chat about UFOs and what you've seen. And thanks for coming back on the show. And we're excited to hang out.
Thanks for having me back on. Always fun.
Tim, a Tim Albarino episode on Blurry Creatures gets intense. Riddle me that, Nathan.
Yeah, I know. But it's good. It's good.
I'm excited. This is
you got to make it interesting.
You know, I got to tell you something. I was talking to a television producer a couple months ago, and she was talking to me about maybe she wanted to think about building a show with me and having me host a show. And she was this English woman. And she was a very dry English woman, older woman, and she had worked with Discovery and with a lot of these big networks. And she told me that she was going to be brutally honest with me, and she was going to critique me. And I said, let's do it. You know, I said, tell me whatever you think. And she said, well, you're not funny.
Wait a minute.
She said, you're not funny. She said, you're too serious.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. But of course, she doesn't really know me, so she doesn't really know what I'm like. Obviously, when I'm talking about things that are important, that are weighty, or things that are research-oriented, I'm in a research mode. I'm in a lecture mode, sort of a professor mode. But I wouldn't disagree with her. In fact, I agree. I'm a rather serious person on camera and in interviews. But I thought it was funny because my partner in the show that we're making together, me and Gary Haven, this show that we're developing that's going to end up on Epoch TV, he always jokes around with me and tells me the same thing, that I'm too serious. And so he had a good laugh when I told him what she said.
Was it like getting critiqued by Mary Poppins?
It was worse. It was a lot worse than that. She reminded me of the woman that deported me from England.
There's a story.
Isn't there like a show about the nanny? Like this, some English woman comes over and teaches people how to be parents.
She's like hitting people with umbrellas and smacking hands.
You know, yeah. I'll critique her too. She's not funny either.
No, I think you have a good point, Tim. We love having you on because it is like we do drive points. And I think that like when you are talking about research and we're talking about the things that we're talking about, they are weighty.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been fun to get to know you in the process. And I mean, yeah. They say you don't have a sense of humor. I don't know.
Well, you'll get to know me a lot more in a few days.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, we have fun. I mean, it's Luke and I's goal sometimes just to, can we get Tim to crack? Let's try. Let's go.
Only took 5 episodes. We got you. Yeah.
We'll do it. But no, I think you're right, though. When you're talking about some of these topics that are weighty, it's hard to, you don't want to give people the wrong ideas. And I think what I like about you a lot, Tim, is that you think things through a lot and you really do try and give the best answers to these complicated questions. So I was thinking today it'd be fun just to kind of talk about your UFO sighting. You said it was like really close to you. And, you know, we talk about a lot of these things in hypothetical terms sometimes because there's not a lot of info, whether it's Bigfoot or UFOs, but when someone sees something as close as you've seen, yeah, I thought it'd be fascinating just to tell some more stories of the things you've actually seen.
Well, as you said, I've had some interesting encounters with UFOs, some of which happened when I lived in Peru, and one, the most remarkable encounter, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard me talk about, it happened in the city of Brook Park, Ohio, suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. That's where I grew up. And I grew up in Brook Park.
When did this happen?
That was, at this point, it was probably about 10 years ago. No, maybe not so many. Maybe it was about 8 years ago, right before I moved out to Bozeman, Montana. And to give a little bit of backstory, I used to live down the street from my brother-in-law. And me and my brother-in-law would often lift weights together in his basement. He had some training equipment in his basement. And so we would train together. And we would often talk about, in fact, I would say the majority of the time our conversation would revolve around UFOs. And not just in a general sense, in a very specific sense, we would discuss the potential technologies that were being reverse engineered or that had been reverse engineered from UFO crash retrievals. We would discuss the potential power source that UFOs are using. Obviously, there's some kind of an anti-gravity mechanism going on. We would discuss aspects of, you know, the military cover-up. So we would always be talking about UFOs. And my brother-in-law is a mechanic, so he's always most interested in the mechanical side of things. And so that's where our conversation would usually begin, is in the mechanics of flying saucers. And we talk about Bob Lazar and stuff like that. And this is important because it was one of these days that I was training at his house in his basement. We're having one of these conversations and he wanted to go to a GNC store and buy some supplements, some pre-workout or something. I can't remember. And so the nearest GNC store happened to be over in Brook Park. We were in Cleveland and the nearest GNC store was over in Brook Park, Ohio, down about 15 minute drive. And the reason why I'm giving so many details is so that people can actually verify what I'm saying is true. That's why I give so many details. Yeah. So I can't remember the night. I don't remember. I should have written it down. I didn't. But I know it was cold. It was in the winter, probably in February. And this particular night was very cold and it was very windy, like really, really windy. And it was bitter cold wind. I do remember that. And so we drove to Brook Park and this GNC store was located in this strip mall. And the strip mall had a big parking lot. And as we're approaching the strip mall, we noticed that there was some object with bright lights was hovering above the last store on the row of stores in the strip mall. And it was fairly large. We thought it might have been a Chinook helicopter or a Black Hawk helicopter. That's the size of what it was. So a large helicopter, and it had very bright lights. And our initial thought was that the Army Reserve is running the National Guard, rather, is running a some kind of a training drill, because the National Guard had a headquarters close to that location. And so we rolled our windows down because we were stopped at a red light. We rolled our windows down because we thought we would hear the telltale sound of the blades whipping through the air. And we heard nothing. There was nothing. Now, that wasn't too bizarre. We were still kind of far away. We weren't right up close yet. And it was windy, but it started to get us a little bit curious, because you would think, I mean, even with the wind and so forth, you would hear a helicopter, Black Hawk helicopter or a Chinook helicopter. And so we went through the light and we pulled into the, I was driving, I pulled into the parking lot of this strip mall. And there was nobody, there was hardly anybody around. It was, everything was almost closed. And we were trying to get to this, to GNC before nine, before it closed. And it was probably sometime around 8:45 or something. So the parking lot was virtually empty. And I pulled into the parking lot, and I didn't park in the spot. I just stopped in the middle of the parking lot and threw the car into park and just sat there, flabbergasted, because we realized as soon as we got into the parking lot that this was not a helicopter. It didn't look like a helicopter at all. It didn't have any blades or anything. It was just hovering above this store, this object. And then suddenly, after I parked, suddenly this object, it glided. Keep in mind, really windy outside. It glided effortlessly from above the store right over my car.
Dang.
Right over and a little bit in front of my car so that we could see the whole thing up to the windshield. It just glided right over the top of us.
How far from your car to the craft?
After it positioned itself over the top of my car, before it did.
Like, after?
Sure, both. Yeah.
It was probably, I don't know, a couple hundred feet away from us, maybe 300 feet away when I was in the middle of the parking lot. But then it came right over my car and descended 40 feet above my car. Oh. I mean, we could have easily hit it with a rock.
Could you see any?
It just descended, slowly descended right over my car.
Are you sticking your head out the window?
No. We rolled the windows down, and again, we rolled them back up after we rolled them down to listen for the helicopters. But then we rolled them down again because Tony and I, my brother-in-law Tony, we know enough about UFOs to know that they're silent.
Mm-hmm.
And we rolled our windows down and we heard nothing. I mean, it was besides the wind, this thing wasn't making any noise. It was about the size of a Chinook helicopter, Black Hawk helicopter, but it was not shaped like a helicopter at all. It was more shaped like a, I always forget. Is it an F-17 or is it an F-19? I think it's an F-17 Nighthawk stealth fighter. It was shaped something like that. It was
like
it was
triangle?
It wasn't a triangle. It was more like a diamond. Oh, yeah. It was most reminiscent of the F-17 Nighthawk.
Hmm. Okay.
With that angular body armor, but it was not the Nighthawk is triangular. It's a delta shape, and it's got very pointed edges. This was a more of a diamond shape, and its edges were rounded, but it did have that angular body armor. It was a grayish green angular body armor. There were no markings on it. I was looking for U.S. Air Force is what I was looking for on it, and we were close enough to see it, you know, if there was any kind of writing on it, and there wasn't. So this craft was completely silent. It was just hovering above my car. There were no, it didn't have any propellers. There was no exhaust. There was no noise, but it did have bright lights. It had, I remember one triangular white light. My brother-in-law remembers two, and it had green and blue lights around the bottom of the fuselage, and they were blinking. And this craft, it just hovered there. And it was completely unmoved by the wind, as if it was enveloped in its own gravitational field. It was completely unmoved by the wind. And my car is like shaking back and forth with these gusts of winds, these gusts of wind. And we're just staring at this thing. We're just gaping at it. Because, you know, this was the subject of our conversation, you know, half an hour before this encounter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had the distinct sense, maybe it was just my mind, but I had this feeling that this thought rather that I was supposed to see this thing almost as if it was waiting for me. It knew we were coming there at that time and it was waiting for us. And when we got there, it just like descended right over my car so that we could get a good long look.
Hmm.
And we did get a good long look. I mean, the thing was incredible. In fact, all I could say was, Tony, this is top secret. You know what? That's all I could say.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I could say. That's all I could to get out. This is top secret stuff.
Well, we've had a lot of talks on our show, obviously, with you about this. You told us a story about Gary Stearman, who was flying a plane and he had a UFO encounter and they communicated with him.
Yeah.
And you know, we've hypothesized that angels and demons, both sides are flying these craft. Did you get a sense of like these were the good guys or this was a government craft or?
My feeling is that this was a hybrid craft. It was reverse engineered alien technology, but I don't know. I have no idea what it was exactly. Like I said, it was shaped. It had a diamond shape. It did not have wings. It had like stubs, little stubs for wings. And those stubs were rounded. It did have that angular body armor. And it was reminiscent of the F-117 Nighthawk fighter. It was reminiscent of it, but it wasn't exactly the same. That's the closest comparison that I can make.
But I want to remind people, like, it was silent. So this is not conventional aircraft, even though it may be something where you're saying it could have been, you know, reverse engineered sort of alien technology. It glided. There was no sound. It wasn't not conventional aircraft or conventional, what we consider conventional military technology. This is something completely different, right, Tim?
That's right. Completely unconventional. Whatever the propulsion system was, it was completely unconventional. Obviously, there were no propellers. A lot of your audience has probably seen video of a Harrier jet taking off. You know, a Harrier jet supposedly is one of the only aircraft we have in the U.S. military and in the Air Force that can take off vertically. In other words, it doesn't need to pick up speed and take off like a regular airplane. Now, maybe that's old news. Maybe we have another one. But the Harrier jets make a lot of noise. And if there's any kind of like cars beneath them or anything, as they take off, they'll push them out of the way or they'll roll over. It's a tremendous burst of energy, of wind to lift those things off the ground.
It's combustion. It's a combustion.
Yeah, it's combustion. And that's conventional technology. That's what our conventional technology looks like. So this was certainly unconventional.
If it's a reverse engineered government craft, you know, what's it doing in a mall parking lot?
Exactly.
It's looking for Dr. Emmett Brown's stolen plutonium.
Maybe they need a creatine and protein. Maybe they want a creatine and protein from GNC as well.
Yeah.
Maybe they were shopping.
It feels alien to me if it's there, you know? If it's like a government thing, it feels like it'd be somewhere else where no one is, you know?
Well, what made it really bizarre for me is this was the neighborhood I grew up in. I had ridden my bike around this area 100 times through that very same parking lot so many times. You know, I'd never seen anything like this before in my life. And here I am. And remember, this is... Well, I say remember, but I didn't mention this. You know, I had only moved. I had been living in Peru previous to this experience.
Mm-hmm.
I had only been living in the Cleveland area for about a year or two when this happened. So I had spent the last decade living in Peru. So here I am back in the neighborhood I grew up in. After living in Peru for a decade, and I'm having this encounter with this craft in this very familiar place. And you know, so we're looking at this thing, just gaping, looking at this thing. And it was probably about a minute to a 2 minute to a 3 minute long experience, which is a long time just to stare at an object.
Yeah.
And I suddenly sort of came out of a daze and I said to my brother-in-law, I said, Tony, your phone. In those days, did not yet have a smartphone. I had a stupid phone. I had a dumb flip phone. And my brother-in-law had a smartphone. And so he sort of shook his head like he was coming out of a daze as well and started to scramble for his cell phone to pull it out of his pocket, obviously to take a picture or a video. And as he's doing that, of course, he dropped it on the floor. As he's pulling out of his pocket, it drops on the floor. He bends down to pick it up. He's scrambling for it because it's kind of dark in our car, except for the light coming off of this craft right above us. And by the time he picks it up and raises it up to take a picture, the craft lifts up higher into the air, turns on its axis, and effortlessly begins to glide off into the distance. And so we exited the vehicle as quick as we could to try and snap a picture. And it was so windy and so frigid. Like as soon as we got out of this car, the wind just smacked us in the face. It was freezing cold, mm-hmm. sub-zero wind. And this thing is just gliding away, like, again, as if it's in its own gravitational field, like it's completely unaffected by the atmosphere. And it wasn't rocking or anything. It was just gliding away over the horizon. And we were just watching it glide over the horizon.
Do you feel like you deal with, could you consider this like spiritual warfare, like something's coming after you?
No, I actually kind of felt like, if anything, I was supposed to see this thing and somebody, I don't know. I mean, it sounds ridiculous. It sounds absolutely insane. I don't know. I mean, we went to fill up gas. I went to fill up gas after this experience. After we went to GNC and got our supplements, we still did that. When we were on our way home, I stopped to get gas and we're just at the gas station. My brother-in-law and I are just, I'm sitting there filling up the tank and we're just looking at each other like, what in the world just happened? I mean, we were just so, we didn't know what to say. We were speechless. What in the world was that? How could it have been there? Why did it hover over our car? Like, was it waiting for us? It was such a bizarre experience that my brother-in-law doesn't even really like to talk about it.
Do you think anyone else saw it? Was there anybody else in the parking lot? Anybody else around? Or was...
Well, this is why I wish I could remember the date. There was a report the next day in a local paper of a UFO sighting in Brook Park, Ohio.
There it is. Mm.
You know, I'll tell you what's really bizarre. 2 years ago, at the end of 2020, I was finishing up writing my book, and I was writing the last chapters of my book, Birthright. And I was writing a chapter called The Alien Threat. For those who've read the book, they know that I recount this encounter in the book, in this chapter, The Alien Threat. And so as I'm writing this encounter, I happen to be reading, for some reason, I was just reading the book, I always forget the name of it. I think it's called Hunt for the Skinwalker. It's the Skinwalker book by George Knapp and Colm Keller. Phenomenal book. It was written, I believe it was written in the 90s. I can't remember, but I always wanted to read it. I hadn't gotten around to reading it all these years. And finally I did. And it just so happened that I was reading this book, Hunt for the Skinwalker, about Skinwalker Ranch, while I was writing my chapter on aliens. And specifically while I was writing about my experience that I had in Brook Park. And so here I am. Maybe I got a paragraph done of my story and my book of what I just told you guys. And I'm sitting down. I would take breaks every now and again and sort of rest my brain and read instead of write. And so I picked up the Hunt for the Skinwalker book and I'm reading and I read this literally right in the midst of writing my own account in my own book of this UFO experience. This comes out of the book, right out of the book, Hunt for the Skinwalker. I just pulled it up. It is called Hunt for the Skinwalker by Hunt for the Skinwalker, Science Confronts the Unexplained at a Remote Ranch in Utah is the full name of the book. Phenomenal book. It's by Colm Keller and George Knapp, who I know. George is a great guy. He's a great reporter in the Las Vegas area. Really, really solid reporter. So here I am sitting here reading this book. And you have to imagine this. I have a little reading station next to my computer here. And so I've got on my computer, I've got my book. The manuscript for my book is open. I'm maybe a paragraph into my story that I'm just told you guys, you know, in terms of writing it. And here it is open. And I'm sitting next to the computer in my reading chair with my books. And I'm reading Hunt for the Skinwalker. And I proceed to read this. This, what I'm about to read is recounted by Tom Gorman, which is a pseudonym, who was the former owner of Skinwalker Ranch. So this is his account, okay? He turned toward the ridge and his jaw slackened. Starkly outlined against the snow-covered ridge was an aircraft that seemed to have just appeared out of nowhere. It was about 30 or 40 feet long, and it reminded Gorman of a snub-nosed, smaller hybrid version of the F-117 and the B-2. In other words, the Nighthawk, the fighter. But it was completely silent. There was no wind, and the stillness was uncanny. The outline of the object, less than 100 yards away, gave Tom a good view of its short, matte black wings. It was definitely like a small version of the F-117 stealth fighter. The odd angle design seemed quite familiar, but Tom knew that the F-117 was extremely noisy. It hovered silently less than 100 yards away and only 15 or 20 feet off the ground. Tom held his breath. The object moved silently away from him without ever increasing its speed and then disappeared into the gloomy night beyond the ridge. Tom heaved a sigh of relief and awkwardly got to his knees in the snow. He looked back several times at the area near the ridge where he had last seen the silent black phantom. What was this advanced technology, he wondered? Who owned it, and what on earth was it doing there on a ranch in Utah? Okay, this is the first time that I had ever encountered a description of the craft that I had seen in Brook Park. This is the first time, and here I am writing it. It's open on my screen, on my computer, as I'm reading these words in my reading chair next to my computer. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. Listen, I have talked to a lot of ufologists. In fact, I talked to Michael Schrat at the True Legends Conference. I talked to Michael Schrat, who I believe is the leading expert on the United States military's aerospace technology. And Michael Schrat has literally documented and cataloged every kind of UFO that he's ever encountered in terms of interviewing people and studying UFOs. He has drawings of them. He has diagrams. He is brilliant. I mean, he is the best. He knows this topic like nobody else. He knows about the conventional craft, and he knows about the unconventional and the UFOs. And he has a catalog of everything. Everything that anybody's ever reported or that we know to be real from the black budget projects and so forth. And this was previous to writing my book. I asked him, I told him what I just told you guys. I told him that story, and I asked him, have you ever heard of a craft like this? Has anybody else ever recounted a story like this? And he said, no, he was intrigued. He said, I've never heard of anything like that, of a craft that looks like that. He said, that's really interesting. And he asked me if I would allow him to catalog it, to add it to his catalog. So you can imagine my amazement. Mm-hmm. Never ever hearing of anybody else who's ever had an encounter with a craft quite like this one, and then reading it exactly, it described exactly as I was writing it in Hunt for the Skinwalker by Colm Keller and George Knapp.
Yeah.
With my manuscript open on my computer next to me.
And I would say that I feel like God works that way sometimes. You know, like you see these connections of things. I feel like oftentimes, you know, for me personally, it feels like when I see these dots being connected, I have to go, okay, am I supposed to be paying attention to this, or something's going on? I mean, the thing about your story that's interesting is like right when your brother-in-law gets to take the camera out, of course, it goes away. It's been sitting there for a couple of minutes. It comes near you specifically. It doesn't sound like a government craft to me, because it's like reading your guys' minds or something.
Well, the government could certainly be looking into, it could have certainly been, well, I say the government, that's a stupid way to say it. The whoever's piloting that technology certainly would be able to, through infrared or whatever, see what we're doing in the car. And so as soon as they detected that my brother-in-law was reaching for his phone, it wouldn't have been difficult for them to see it. I mean, they could have seen it with infrared or whatever. They were looking they could have seen into my windshield, I'm sure, just like I could look up and have a full view of this thing right above me. Mm. What's bizarre, the most bizarre thing is why the heck did they or it hover over my car? And no, we were not abducted. And believe me, I've thought about that. We were not abducted. There was no missing time at all. We were completely coherent the whole time. We can remember the whole incident. So it wasn't an abduction event. And I wouldn't, and if it was, I would tell you. You know, I would tell you, I think I was abducted, but I wasn't.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, if like you were supposed to see it. Like, you know, LA came on and says he saw a UFO. And then a lot of these guys in these realms like have an experience of some kind like this, right? Like, I mean, it's no wonder that you and LA have both had a similar UFO story. And then you devote your lives to exposing these things. I mean,
yeah, Steve Quayle's had some really close UFO type stuff too.
Yeah.
And Tom Horn.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and when I started getting into the Bigfoot stuff, I saw a creature as a kid. It was really inspirational for me because I believed that this stuff is real because I had an experience, and it was like I saw something. And I think if you see something, it's a different ball game.
It is. Well, it definitely solidifies the reality of it in your own mind. I mean, you can't deny what you've seen. And so, especially if you've been researching something and then suddenly you see it.
Right.
And now this was not a saucer. It was not a saucer. It was not.
I think LA's was.
It was not a silver, you know, like a stainless steel, matte finished stainless steel type craft that most people see. This is part of the reason why I felt it was military, is because it had that angular body armor. And it was the grayish black or the grayish green, you know, really it was basically black matte, but I felt like there might've been a grayish or a greenish hue to it, but it could have just been black matte and the lights reflecting off my car or something like that made it appear to have a hue. At the very least, it was matte black. And so it's exactly the description that Tom Gorman, the previous owner of Skinwalker Ranch, gives in this book. They talk about how this craft was deploying some kind of a laser, and it seemed to be surveying something that was under the ground or the terrain or something, but it was deploying a laser. So my sense, again, I don't know, who knows, but my sense is that this was a hybrid craft with alien components, with conventional and unconventional alien components, that it was military or black project, and it was probably out for a test run. But again, why in the world? I mean, you're talking about, if this is military, this is a deep black project. People are not supposed to know that this craft exists. They're not supposed to see it. So why would it be hovering over a store? You know,
it's weird.
In a strip mall,
yeah, it's weird.
In the middle of Brook Park, Ohio, with all of its lights brightly beaming, right? You would think, okay, maybe it's malfunctioning.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they turn the lights off?
Mm-hmm.
Why be hovering there with all the lights on and then come hover over my car?
And why even have lights on? Like, I mean, that's a good question, like, that I had for you, is that, do you think that if they're alien, not government hybrids, do they have lights?
Oh, yeah. Alien craft do have lights, very bright lights.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know why. For one thing, the craft there's a halo of light that's emitted around the craft. And this has to do with what we talked about this. It's the energy system. It's the reactor. The reactor that they're using, it's a matter-antimatter reactor, most likely. According to Bob Lazar, who I absolutely believe, and I always say that, but I do believe Bob Lazar. And I believe that the craft they're utilizing a matter-antimatter reactor, and it creates gravity waves, and it generates gravity waves. They use the energy to generate gravity waves, and it creates a halo of light around the craft when it's energized. When the craft is fully energized, by the way, it disappears. Not because it's somehow using some kind of a cloaking device, but because it's distorting space-time.
And you think humans are fully safe if they fly around in these things? Like, they're not affected by it?
If we fly around in them, I don't know. I don't know. I do know that last time we discussed the documents that were released, the FOIA documents that were obtained by the Sun paper, in which there were studies done for the Pentagon, in which pilots who got in close proximity, these craft had radiation burns, had time dilation.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Pregnancies. Yeah.
Things that were consistent with the technology that Lazar describes.
If you're being pulled into it, or I don't know if your body has to be predisposed or the way that they're designed, they can handle this sort of technology and the way they travel around. I mean, obviously you go too fast in an airplane, you pass out. So,
well, inside of the craft, we know that inside of the alien craft, and certainly inside of the hybridized craft that the military has, but inside of the alien craft, it is a safe area. You're not getting radiated. We know that because there's a whole lot of abductees who have been inside of these things for extended periods of time. Hmm.
There's got to be some way you're not pulling tons of G's too, right? I mean, there has to be some sort of gravity thing inside the.
Yes, and it is because you are within your own. You're in a gravity distortion bubble. Let's put it that way. And so you're not being affected by the air around you, by the atmosphere around you. And there's a long technical explanation. People can look up Bob Lazar's old original video that he made back in, mm-hmm. I want to say it was 1990, maybe it was 1989, mm-hmm. or 1990, 80, or 1999, or 1998. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 1998.
I remember the feeling was, it almost sounded like time travel versus being.
Well, you know, it's time dilation for sure. It's based on Einsteinian physics. So empty space is not empty space. It's a fabric, let's say, which by the way, kind of coincides with some things that are said in the Bible, specifically in the Book of Psalms. But it's more like a fabric that we call space-time. Space-time is, if you affect one, you affect the other. So in other words, the fabric of space, if you can bend it, you're not just bending, you know, the dimensional fabric of space, you're bending time, and not like Back to the Future, you know.
Bummer.
Mm-hmm. We're talking. Who knows? We're talking small amounts of time. So time dilation could be 5 minute difference, mm-hmm. from, you know, if you're standing outside that gravity distortion bubble, compared to if you were standing within it, maybe a 5 minute, maybe a 10 minute. I don't know. I'm not a physicist, but certainly it would be something reasonable. It's not, you're not going back in time or forward in time. It's just, a time bubble. And, I mean, it's a space time distortion bubble. And again, when you distort space, you're distorting time. So that's why these craft can move through the water in the very same way that they move through the air. It doesn't matter. The air and the water are basically, they affect the craft in the same way. And that's why they can come out of the water without a humongous splash. Like, you know, imagine even just your car flying up out of the water, what a big splash and what a big noise that would make. Well, these craft come out of the water as if they're like, it's like a butter knife cutting through it.
Well, that kind of makes me think about some of the stories I hear coming out of places like Mexico. And one of the thoughts I had earlier when you were talking about this is that, like, you see them in Peru, you see them in Ohio, and what do we talk about all the time, Luke? There's giants in Ohio and there's giants in Peru. Is there some sort of connection between these megalithic places and where the giants were in ancient America, and then Mexico? You have a lot of mounds and weird stuff and skeletons.
Well, the craft are everywhere, though. They're not just,
well, sure.
Around. There's UFOs everywhere. And the reason, and I'm telling you what, there's a lot more than we think. And when they're fully energized, we can't see them. So they could be hovering over your house. You wouldn't see it when it's fully energized. And, you know, you mentioned Peru. I remember before I was really investigating UFOs and things of this nature, I knew about UFOs. Of course, I knew about UFOs like everybody else. I remember I would stand on the roof of this building, of the house we were renting, and I'd stand there with my wife at nighttime, and we would look up into the sky and we would see these craft, they were UFOs, and they were different configurations, and some of them were quite close, and we would watch them just maneuver around the sky in impossible ways. Everybody's familiar with that. We're taking hard right angles, you know, or suddenly accelerating away at impossible speeds, or drifting up and down and moving in an erratic fashion in the sky. And we would go, huh, look, it's a UFO. I mean, I'm actually more excited and more surprised when I see things now than I am back then, because back then it was just like, I just took it for granted. Like, oh, look, a UFO, you know, because I didn't really know about the grays yet. I didn't really know about the abduction phenomenon. I just knew about UFOs. Hmm. And it was just like, oh, look, there's another one. Look at that one over there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was,
like a local encountering some sort of cryptid creature that, you know, people talk about for centuries. And oh yeah, that thing's out there. I see him all the time.
Yeah, there he is.
It's no big deal, right?
Right. And that's kind of how it was for me and my wife. We would stand there and we'd watch these things. Not always, not every night, but every now and again. And there's a lot of UFO activity in the Amazon, by the way. A lot.
Well, yeah, there's lots of weird stuff in the Amazon.
And I was in the Amazon basin. You know, I was in an Amazon jungle city. And a lot of UFO activity. Everybody's seen a UFO out there.
What do you think they're doing? What are they doing there in the Amazon? What do you think?
Well, maybe they got a base under the ground there. That's one thing. There may be materials that they're mining, that they're extracting from the Amazon, some kind of a mineral or some kind of raw material, or they're harvesting something maybe out there. Who knows? But there's a lot. There's a lot of UFO activity in the Amazon. And like I said, there's a lot of UFO activity everywhere, but when these craft, when they're fully energized, you can't see them. You know, I keep saying that because it's very important. When they're fully energized, you can't see them. It's not magic. It's space-time distortion. So we know that gravity, they're producing gravity waves. And we know that gravity bends light. We know that for sure.
A lot of people who listen to the show explain that to us when they say they have their UFO sightings. It sounds like that. They just kind of like, almost like they're just gone. But I know we've gone into detail about how you don't think they just disappear. It's just they're affecting, you know, the gravity around the craft, so it looks like it. They disappear.
Well, they're bending. Well, we know that gravity bends light, so we know that there are stars on the other side of the sun that we shouldn't be able to see, but we can see them. Why? Because the light is bending around the gravitational field of the sun, and that's what happens with these craft when they're fully energized. So the light bends around them, so you essentially see what's behind them. They're still there. They're still there. You could probably shoot them out of the sky with a bazooka. They're still there, but you can't see them when they're fully energized. Now, when they're not fully energized, you can see them. And at nighttime, they're very bright because they have this halo of light. And, you know, and they move erratically through the sky. You know, that's one thing I always wondered. Why the heck? Here you got these advanced craft, and yet they're moving through the sky like a drunken Frisbee. Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think?
There's a description. There's a good description.
That's
UFO.
That's a t-shirt. That's a t-shirt right there.
they're drunken moving Frisbee. Through the sky like a drunken Frisbee.
Tim, I mean, we hear this a lot on our show that like all the people that we interview, obviously they get their YouTube channel scrubbed, and several guests have come on our show have gotten mysteriously sick and then they're gone. And people say, are they? And people are always like hypothesizing, like, what happened? Are they taking these people out? You feel like they were this craft could be have a target on your back because you're speaking the truth, and it's like obviously you're pissing off the entities.
I would be more worried about pissing off the dumb state, if your audience remembers that term, dumb state.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Than the gray aliens, the government. You know, there's such a thing called a military abduction. And they're called MILABs, military abductions. And those abductions are 10 times worse than being abducted by a gray alien. I mean, military abductions are brutal, and they rough you up, and they do all kinds of terrible things to people. It was happening a lot back in the 80s and 90s when they were trying to figure out what the grays were doing. I don't know if it's still happening to the same degree, but, you know,
That sounds like the missing 411 stuff to me.
I have no idea what's going on with those, you know. I've read articles and I'm familiar with the missing 411 phenomenon, but I'm not, I don't know. I mean, aliens don't, the grays don't need you to be out in the middle of a forest to abduct you. The grays can abduct you from your car while you're driving down the road. They don't need you to be isolated. It makes it easier for them if you're isolated, but they don't need you to be isolated. So it doesn't make any sense that the grays are abducting people. And by the way, the grays return you to the point of abduction. Mm-hmm. These people just disappear. They're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was
saying. And it almost sounds to me like it's got something to do with the dumbs, with the deep underground military bases. Like they're taking people. Mm-hmm. And they're taking advantage of people being in these isolated areas where people will assume that, you know, they're eaten by wolves or a grizzly bear or something. Like they're abducting these people. They're taking them. But then again, you got to ask the question, how come the clothes are left behind so often? Like, you know, if you're going to abduct somebody, why take the time to take their shoes and shorts off?
Yeah, and fold them and stuff. I've heard some.
Exactly. So unless they're doing that to throw people off and create this mystique around the whole thing. And that certainly could be the case.
But then the weird thing is they find them in places they've already searched too. And, you know, all the phenomenon that goes on with the missing 411 stuff is that, you know, he's got a whole laundry list of criteria that have to fit his cases.
And by the way, the Greys are not the only faction out there flying around in UFOs.
Bigfoot.
I don't know if Bigfoot flies in them, but he's been seen in them. He's been seen going into them and coming out.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But, you know, at least according to certain...
People tell you that? That he goes in and out of them?
No, but there's famous cases where Bigfoot creatures have been seen in proximity of UFOs.
Oh, yeah.
Or actually disembarking or embarking. So...
Maybe they put him up to... Maybe Bigfoot's for hire.
Yeah. He's a mercenary.
Muscle.
He's a muscle.
He's a muscle like the Wookiees in Star Wars.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, like if they Chewbacca. Have...
Like Chewbacca. Yeah, that's right. I don't know. Who the heck knows? You know, I mean, like you think about these, nothing really makes a whole lot of sense.
Hey, Tim, I have a question. I've had like one UFO kind of experience, and it was I was in Sedona, and the claim there, and I always want to kind of ask someone other than the people that we were with about the idea of the relation between quartz and the UFO phenomena, because the claim when I was there is that they somehow use or harness or quartz in the rock, and they somehow that there's some energy associated with that. And I don't know if that's just new age, whatever, or if it's actually there's some sort of correlation there, but I always find that I saw weird stuff there, like really weird stuff. And I'd never seen anything before. And it was today's the only experience I ever had, but it was, you know, craft with lights going up, coming down. Mm. And then
that's interesting.
And landing on this big mountain that the people that we were with, it was actually a tour, claimed that it was because this mountain was 90% quartz and there's some sort of, who knows, energy transfer regen that these crafts.
That's weird, because Derek was just talking about megaliths and how they use certain...
And the quartz, right? It made me think about that, and I just was like, I want to ask Tim at some point if he has any thoughts on that, if he's heard anything on that.
Well, that's really fascinating. You know, I have investigated megaliths on the island of Sardinia, megalithic blocks that were covered in quartz. Mm. Covered in quartz. And I wondered why that was the case. You could tell that they had a quartz, probably a finished quartz exterior, like, you know, maybe 6 inches thick of solid quartz, and before you got to the stone, and you can imagine megaliths covered in quartz, how stunning that would be.
Yeah,
I mean, just imagine that. You know, imagine the Great Pyramid covered in quartz. How that thing would sparkle and shine in the sun and glow in the light of the moon. And so I know that there was some kind of application for the quartz, and it was the quartz was stuck to the stone, and it looked like it was like glued to the stone, like with some kind of an ancient cement, like it was glued. Mm. And you can see that there was a layer of quartz that had been attached, affixed to the stone. And it was weathered by this time. It was weathered and granular in most places, not all places. There were still places where it was pretty smooth, but most of it was at this point cracked off and crystallized and so forth. There's something to that. There's something to that. It's very strange.
Yeah. Strange. And supposedly it's a conductor.
Conductor. Yeah.
So that stuff is so weird to me. And
it's very strange. I do think there is something to quartz. Now, I don't know what exactly it was used for. But it might have some kind of a technological application.
Well, you can tell Nate, he keeps wearing these quartz necklaces, and it really hurts our brand. So if you talk
puka shells, I'm back to the puka shells.
Is that nose ring he wears?
It is. We're trying to get him away from it because I think it hurts the blurry brand. But
he looks like an Antifa guy.
I have to take it out for the interviews with Tim.
Looks like an Antifa warrior.
He does. No, he's out here.
Quartz puka shells.
Just trying to.
Well, conduct. I mean, it does make you understand, like. Ask questions about the New Age is always obsessed with certain stones and rocks and a lot of people.
Yeah, most of it's just stupid with the New Age. Most of it's just there's really no depth to. There's no real knowledge. It's just all very, you know, woo, to use that term. Yeah. There's nothing there. It's whipped cream. But I think as I said, there is something to be said for crystals, especially quartz. I don't think that they have some kind of an inherent power, but I think that they're used in a technological application, maybe in the same way that we use, what's that substance that we use in chips, computer chips. I can't remember. It's a rare earth mineral that we use in computer chips. I can't remember the name of it. The Chinese are mining all over the earth.
Lithium?
And I don't know.
Lithium? No.
Something like that's being used in these chips that only that kind of metal really works well, that kind of material. So, and maybe that's the way quartz is.
Silicon's in all of the
computer chips. Right. But maybe that's the way quartz is too, with it to some degree for some kind of a technological application.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah.
But it is weird. I'm telling you, I've seen megalithic blocks with it glued on, cemented on.
And if you buy the Birthright Conference DVD, Tim will wrap it in quartz for only $69.99, right?
Nice.
You get a chunk of quartz in Sardinia.
Dude, that would be awesome.
I did have a chunk of quartz from Sardinia that I brought back. I don't know where it went.
Man, you've been all over the place, Tim. We're jealous.
I guess the UFO was coming to get that, I think.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to retrieve that and bring it back to Sardinia.
You're like, we're sitting in the parking lot in a DeLorean. We don't understand what's going on. You know what happened.
1955.
You know? I bet you had a sweet vest on and your skateboard in the trunk and you were ready to get out of there. Not in the middle of the winter. I've been in Ohio in the middle of the winter. It's the worst.
I was drinking a Coke out of one of those old bottles too. And, you know, I had tennis shoes on and jeans rolled up.
Real ready for the winter.
I'm just trying to evoke an image of Tim in the 80s. Marty McFly. Tim in the 80s sipping on a Coke out of a glass bottle with Hill tennis Valley. Shoes.
What do you, you wanted a Travis Walton experience, right? Just be taken right up.
I don't, I'm not sure I believe the Travis Walton thing.
You don't?
No, I don't know. I don't know about that one. There's so many more believable accounts, abduction. I mean, there's hundreds and thousands, and many of them are much more believable with lots of witnesses and all kinds of stuff, and that were not so sensationalized. I just don't know. I don't know sure. about that one in sure. particular.
Well, you know, I mean, if you have less teeth, it's harder to believe those people. I was in an old truck on a dirt road, and then
so the amount of teeth that you have in your mouth, that's the degree by which you can be believed.
Well, I think so.
Well, the aliens are taking them. You know, they might be taking teeth. They're collecting teeth and making necklaces.
What if you're missing a bunch of teeth, but you got gold teeth replacing those other teeth?
I don't know if you're desirable or not.
It's a diamond grill.
Is that an indication of higher knowledge?
You sound like a pirate. Well, Tim, we're excited to see you here at the end of the week, and excited about the Birthright Conference. And we are going to be doing a special little last minute giveaway, Nate, and hoping that some of our members will then take the opportunity to join us at Birthright. I know that we've got there's a full schedule, but you know, the Blurry Creatures will be doing an interview with you and some of the other guests on Friday. So we're excited to do that, and then to join you on Saturday for the full conference experience. And yeah, we're excited to hang out. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we have a special event, a blurry event from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. It's kicking the conference off, and it's mm-hmm. going to be the three of us doing this live. Mm-hmm. We have our main conference venue, which is really big for Saturday, but then we have a smaller venue for Friday, which is more of an intimate venue. We're going to set up some chairs. We got a little stage. It's going to kind of be like a live podcast situation.
Yeah.
It's going to be really cool. And all the other speakers will be there and some other very interesting people. And so we're doing that from 2 to 3. You guys are kicking the conference off with the blurry event.
Let's go.
Dude, we'll take it. It's an honor. We're going to just, we're the first into the fray. Tip of the spear, baby.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
It's just like an old wedding. You know, you bring out the crappy wine first, right? That's us, right?
And we will be drinking wine as we're talking, so we'll probably be
it's a classy event. You
know. Wait, is it? I think it's the other way around. You bring out the wine first.
The question is, will we make more sense or less sense when we're drunk? So come to the Birthright Conference and find out.
Find out. Yeah. Hey, you did the Jesus version where the crappy wine comes first and the good wine's at the end. But really, the good wine comes first, and you wait till everybody gets hammered and the crappy wine comes out. That was the whole idea of the miracle, was the best wine. There's a great metaphor in there, obviously.
I tried. I just see, I'm not smart enough to even come up with my own metaphor here. But I was close.
I was self-deprecating for our show, so actually I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you always make fun of yourself.
Yes. Well, Tim,
right. For people who can't go to the conference too, we have I just announced yesterday we have video on demand through Vimeo.
Okay.
That's going to be available. All six sessions of the conference, over 6 hours of content. And the VOD is going to be, you're going to be able to rent it for a year or something like that, like a ridiculous amount of time. So it's you practically own it. And we have a pre-order on that right now, and you can save 20%. You get a 20% discount right now if you go over to birthrightconference.com. You can go sign up for a pre-order the video on demand rental of the conference. Again, it's going to be over 6 hours of content. It's only like $25 or something. So it's a great deal, and you can take advantage of that. Go pre-order. The pre-order is going to be only available for a limited time, and it's going to become available as soon as we get the conference edited and uploaded, because obviously we're filming it. So you can go and sign up for that right away on birthrightconference.com.
Well, Tim, excited. I know Nate's got a role here, so. We're excited. We can't wait to see you. We're excited to be giving away tickets. See us Friday, Saturday, the Birthright Conference, Nashville, Tennessee.
Yep. Friday at 2 o'clock is when the blurry events happen. That's when the conference starts. 2 o'clock Friday.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way through Saturday, 9 o'clock at night or something like that.
Heck yeah. So if you haven't jumped on board and supported the Blurry Creatures, we got the perks coming, right, Luke? We got all the perks.
Got all the juice.
And Tim.
All the perks.
Tim, thank you so much for coming on our show so often and just promoting us and just helping us build the Blurry Creature empire of weirdness. You've been really, really, really just generous with your time, and we hope that tons of blurries show up, and we're going to have shirts and stickers and all that good stuff.
And we're great.
Got to come get your Bigfoot sticker.
That's right. We're grateful for you, brother. Yep. Get the Bigfoot
sticker. No, it's my pleasure, guys. I come on your show often because I really like you guys, and I think you got a great show. I love the memes. I love the memes on Instagram.
Yeah, the memes.
I think you guys got the best memes out there.
Nate, oh, dude, Nate's head's huge now. He's barely gonna. It's not even fitting on the Zoom screen anymore.
Hey. No, I love the '80s theme. I love the '80s music. That's. I think it's perfect. So just keep rocking the blurry memes.
Yep. Don't stop believing in Bigfoot.
That's right. So we'll see you Friday, or we'll see you
Friday.
Hill Valley, 1985.
Yeah, that's right. And if you show up to the Birthright Conference and there's no cars and just a UFO, good luck. Get out of there.
If you show up to a hotel and you see a DeLorean out front, you know you're at the right place.
Yeah, exactly.
And fog machines. You know you showed up the right time.
And a guy in a Bigfoot suit walking around.
Yes.
That's where the blurry creatures guys are going to be, if you see all that.
Maybe next year we'll have some kind of crazy entrance like that, like we're 80s wrestlers.
I thought this was a serious conference.
I thought you guys were going to conduct a live interview with me dressed up in Bigfoot.
Well, dude, you know what? Careful what you wish for, Tim.
Yeah. You never know. If you look at Luke's Instagram, you'll realize the man likes to dress up. So just
I'm into theme parties. So let's make it happen.
Yeah, it's like a serious conference about transhumanism. What's this Bigfoot here doing?
What's this guy doing?
I love it. Well, thanks, Tim. We're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
See you, brother.
Later.